wait for your texts. I had quite a few texts tonight as well. Let's just scroll down here. Reasonable question from Steve in Hampshire. Going to be a student, or I don't know if he's the student or whether he's the parent of a student. He asks, what's the best laptop on the market for about £400?
Best laptop for £400. I think, well, there's various choices. You can go for one of the Dell Inspiron series, for example. What I'd say to you, rather than say this make and model, because, you know, people will have different preferences of screen size and battery life and so forth. If I can tell you what I think you might be able to get specification-wise for 400 and look for that spec.
Sure.
So an Intel processor, ideally an i5, if not an i3 processor. Ideally 8 gigabytes of RAM, or at least that's the memory that the programs run in, or at least 4 gigabytes with the ability to expand it to 8 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally for 400 now, I think you can get one with a solid state drive in it as opposed to a spinning hard drive, which will give you much faster access. But that solid state drive should still be 256 gigabytes or more. There are cheaper machines with 128 gigabytes, but that's not really going to leave you with enough space once you've installed Windows on it.
Sure.
And then think about the screen size and think about the battery life, and particularly for students, all-day battery life can be important. Some students are using tablets for a lot of what they do, so they're getting iPads and other tablets, and you can get an iPad for less than £400, so that might be an option. That's not fully functional as a laptop, but it's quite good for note taking, and it has the advantage of a long battery life and being instant on, so you're not having to boot it up, and it's lightweight. So some people use that as a solution as well. But brands that I would look at are Dell. I would look at Asus as a brand. Apple will be out of your price range for laptops. I think those two, I'd be possibly Samsung as well. Some of the Samsung ones are quite nice. Again, it's interesting. We were saying about how, products go in cycles. All of these brands have produced really bad laptops at one point or another. But at the moment, the brands that I mentioned, I think, are on top of their game.
These SSD drives, then, if you've got an SSD drive that's 256 gig on a computer that's costing about £400, do you get that? Is that the only drive? Is that the only hard drive on the machine, or do you also get an additional hard drive that would spin in the normal way to give you more memory? More storage space.
There are some laptops that have a much smaller SSD drive, which is used to put the operating system, so it's fast to boot up, to start up. But then the most of the programs and the data is accessed off a traditional spinning drive. So that's the sort of compromise solution. But as SSD technology has become cheaper, that sort of approach is fading away. And most laptops don't have space for two drives in them. Some of the bigger ones do, but most do not.
Mm-hmm.
So by and large, it's a question of you use the SSD as the only drive, the only internal drive, and then you can always plug in an external device if you need to for backup purposes, or if you've got a large video or photo collection or something like that.
Or I suppose you could nowadays use cloud services for that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, you can if it's material that is not sensitive. So, personally, I wouldn't put my photos in the cloud, but I would put my music collection in the cloud because, it's not particularly private what music I listen to, but my photos I wouldn't want shared or hacked. So you need to think about, what your sensitivities are. People have very different approaches. Some people don't care. They'll put everything up in the cloud. Others will put nothing. And most of us will take a more sort of finessed approach and put some things but not others. But yes, that's another approach as well. And, that's increasingly the case, that the assumption is that our devices are always connected wirelessly to the internet, and therefore it's no longer necessary to have huge storage capabilities. But I think as far as a laptop is concerned, it's still good to have capacity, and not least because in a laptop, the hard drive or the SSD is not just used to store our data and our files and our programs. It's also used as a working area for the operating system itself. It uses a portion of it itself, which is why when you start filling a drive up more than, say, about 80%, the device itself starts slowing down because you're starting to limit the amount of space that it's got as its own working area. And that has the effect of slowing it down. So it is problematic. I mean, we're at that sort of slightly difficult transitional period where hard drives are still cheaper at the higher capacities. But, you know, you can just about get a 256 in the £400 machine now, but it's not very easy to do. You have to sort of shop around and buy wisely. The other approach is, if you really can't do it, is get one with a rotating drive now and pay money to replace it later. But that if you do it in a year's time, the drives will be cheaper, but on the other hand, you've got probably the cost of transferring that data and installing the new one and then transferring it back. It'll either need some personal know-how, or you'll have to spend, you know, £50 or £75 to pay someone to do that for you.
Jay is in Cambridge and he's called us on 0808 590 9693. Hello there, Jay.
Hi there, how are you?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Okay, I'm a big fan of the show.
Nice to hear from you. Well, I understand you've got a situation with Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm getting some kind of troll problem. I've got a laptop and I go onto the internet with a 3 dongle. Mm-hmm. It seems that somebody's coming in through the Wi-Fi access and just switching off the computer, just shutting it down. And that happened about 4 times. And what I wanted to do, if possible, is just to shut down Wi-Fi so it's not operational at all.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how to do that.
That's quite an extreme solution, but, you know, obviously there is an option. Can I just ask you a question? Why do you think that your computer is being shut down by someone else and not by a fault or a software setup?
Fine. I'm working on it. I'm listening to a lecture or something and just switches off.
Okay.
Just
but
goes
that,
down.
But it just suddenly goes off.
Yep, entirely dead.
And it hasn't shut down in a normal way. It's actually just tripped, yeah?
Yeah.
So that sounds to me more likely to be a hardware fault. It would be hard. Nothing is impossible, but it would be hard. Someone accessing your computer could cause it to close down in an orderly fashion by, you know, going to start and shut down and so forth. It's harder for someone from outside to do that to your computer, to just suddenly cut the power to it. Unless
I also found that Defender, when I start the computer up now, Defender is put into an off mode. And I have to restart Defender,
okay.
So it reinstalls itself.
Right. So,
and that may have been done as well, you see.
Yeah,
I've had
okay.
this kind of thing occur before, so that's why I'm thinking in that direction.
I understand, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just asking you to think about various possibilities, and it's also possible that there's more than one thing going on. It could be that Defender is being disabled by some sort of virus or malware that's commonly done, you know, common antivirus and security softwares can be disabled. However, there are other corruptions that can take place to programs that stop them from starting up as well. So I think what you need to do is do a full system scan of your computer to look for any viruses or so forth. Do that ideally in what's called safe mode. What version of Windows are you running, Jay?
Running Windows 7.
Windows 7.
I didn't want to upgrade. I had on a previous computer, and I found that all my all the little pictures of photographs and so on didn't work anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Windows 10. You know, if you buy a new machine, you don't really have a choice these days. If you're buying a Windows machine, it will be Windows 10, and it tends to run best on machines which came with Windows 10. When you upgrade Windows 7 and so forth, that's a bit of a problem. So do a full system scan in safe mode of your Windows 7 computer. Look for any viruses. If you find any, obviously eradicate them. If that then doesn't solve the problem of it shutting off, then I would get the machine to an engineer, because there are certain hardware faults that could be dangerous as well that can lead to machines shutting down in an abrupt fashion. So by all means, look for viruses, because it could be both as well. But if that doesn't solve the problem, then get it to an engineer.
Right. But there's no way of shutting down Wi-Fi so it can't operate.
You can shut down Wi-Fi. You can go into the settings in your router and settings page of your router and do that. But I wouldn't do that straight away.
Jay in Cambridge, thanks very much indeed for your call. We'd love to hear from you. You can call us on 0808 590 9693. You can text 85058. You can email upallnight at bbc.co.uk. And we are at BBC 5 Live on social media. This is an interesting one. Jalal emails to Fevzy on Up All Night.
I'd say that was a coincidence.
Yes. There aren't many Fevzys, are there? No, absolutely. He says, I recently invested in Litecoin and Ripple. I wanted to know what your view is on the future of cryptocurrency.
Yeah. Okay.
That's an interesting one.
So Bitcoin is the best known of the cryptocurrencies. So these are currencies. They're effectively digital currencies. That don't have any physical form. There are no physical bitcoins or bitnotes or anything else. They are created. They're created by algorithms that you crunch on a computer to generate them. And the more bitcoins that were generated, the harder it was to generate new ones. So that to stop the currency from devaluing. The problem is. That they're really unstable. We've seen huge fluctuations in for example, Bitcoin rates. They've been going to all-time highs and then dropping back. It's very hard. Someone offered to pay me for services in Bitcoins recently, and I didn't accept it because it's very hard to know by the time you get paid what that's going to be worth. The other problem is that these are not currencies that are supported or managed by any bank, and to some people that's a great attraction. And for example, people who produce ransomware often elect to be paid in cryptocurrencies because they think that the payments can't be traced. They can be traced, it's just harder to do it, but they use it for that reason. So people who don't want their transactions being recorded and traced use cryptocurrencies. Other people use it because they're fashionable, but I don't think it's not for me to give people financial advice in any way, but speaking personally, I don't think I'd want my life savings in a cryptocurrency because I just wouldn't feel very, very secure. But some people like it. Some people like, sort of, for socio-political reasons, currencies aren't controlled by central banks, you know, and that fits in with their own philosophy and so forth. So there are benefits to it. It is an internationally traded currency, but it's not one that works in quite the same way as other currencies, and I would suggest is less stable.
I suppose you've got to be a fairly good friend to risk as well. You know, you can't, as for all the reasons you just described, most people will just be ultimately very, very put off by the idea.
Yeah, and also, but a lot of people made a lot of money out of Bitcoins because for a long while they just went up and up and up and up, you know. But if you're interested in doing that, you could just as well buy shares.
Yes.
It's a similar thing, but share markets are at least regulated to some extent, but they are also prone to fluctuations. And the thing about when people buy shares, they tend to buy portfolios of shares so that they hedge their risk. Whereas if all your money is in one cryptocurrency, you've literally, you know, got your egg, well, not literally, but figuratively, you've got your eggs in one basket. And so I guess, Jalal, if I was going to put my money in cryptocurrencies, I'd put it in more than one. But I'd also put it in other things as well, and not large sums of money, but that's just me. But some people have made absolute fortunes on it, so...
What they call a balanced portfolio is, I suppose.
I think that's the expression.
Yeah, absolutely. 0808 590 9693 for your calls. Brian in Merseyside. Hi there, Brian.
Hello. Hiya. Okay. Any chance of having a word with the Sedgley there?
Yeah.
Hello, Brian.
He's ready to talk to you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hiya, Sez.
Hello.
If you don't mind, Sez, I was gifted by a very dear friend about a year ago. A fully boxed up laptop, in the bag. Here you go, as you do. And she said, it doesn't stay on power. You know, you can plug it in, it'll work. Here's the password. Go, and it does. It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
But what's happening is what she quite rightly pointed out is you know when I pull the power lead out, or the power lead falls out.
Yes.
It it's got like nearly zero battery power.
Yeah.
It'll last for about maybe 2 minutes, and if I'm not, you know, if it goes out or if I move away and whatever, and I'm in the middle of an email or sending something.
Yeah.
I go, oh, where's the power? By the time I get the power, and I go, I'll plug it in, it goes off.
Yeah. Yeah,
how
I understand.
Difficult is it? And what I'm looking at here, I'm looking at it's called Acer.
Acer, yeah.
It's an Acer laptop. You know, in the old fashioned sense of a very big laptop here.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be very difficult to repair to change the internal battery?
Right. Okay, so we're assuming it is the battery, and from what you're saying, that would be my guess as well, although there are other possibilities as well that could
all
give
right.
rise to similar problems. So rechargeable batteries don't last forever. They typically are good for a few hundred recharge cycles. So if that laptop's a few years old, then and it's been run off the battery.
I would definitely estimate that this is within over the last 10 years in age. You know,
okay. All
you
right.
know, so, I would just estimate that it's been well looked after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we come in a bag and everything and the power pack and everything.
Yeah.
You know, but
the battery
do?
Will
it
only
just
yeah.
hold its charge.
Yeah, and that's quite normal. That's not an unreasonable thing. You know, after 3 years, you would normally see the capacity starting to reduce. After 5 to 10 years, you know, mm-hmm. you expect what you're getting.
Okay.
So the answer to your question is, it depends on the model. Some laptops of any brand have batteries that you just pull the slider across and pull it out. It's usually stored, you know, by the hinge, underneath the hinge. And you just do it, you pull it out and you buy a replacement one. They're not particularly cheap, I have to say.
No.
You know, they can be sort of £70 up. But other laptops have the battery sort of built in and encapsulated in a way that they're not designed to be replaced by the user and would need to go back to, an engineer. The problem with that is if you've got a 10-year-old laptop, how much money do you want to be spending on it before it's too much, you know?
Given the fact that, you know, I've got like documents and stuff I've downloaded and correspondence I've had and it's a useful friend because... Mm. You know, I sometimes use it for other than listening to you now on the radio. I've just got it on flat, but I listen to like 5 Live or I listen to my BBC iPlayer.
Yeah.
And I watch stuff, you know, and stuff like that. And, I do my YouTube thing, you know what I mean?
I understand. If I may ask you.
I practice guitar myself, so
okay.
I'm using it as what I'm saying? I interact with the thing.
Yeah, no, I understand.
The only problem we have sometimes is if I move or if the power lead like slips out. Because let's face it, right, we're in the dead of night now, right. If I move or I'm in bed, you know what I mean? Mm. And if I roll over and the power lead slips out to the duvet, whatever it would be.
Yeah.
And by the time I realise, oh, do you know what, where's that gone? And then I go, I jump up, put the light on, snatch it on.
It's too late.
Plug it back in.
Yeah, and you'll have an accident in the middle
off.
Of the night trying to plug it in.
It goes off, you know, yeah.
Brian, what's the model number? Do you know the model number of this AC unit?
No, the only thing I know, it's I think it's old, but it's got a Pentium thing sticking on it.
Okay.
You know, Windows 7 or something like that on it, and it's an Acer.
Yeah.
But I don't think I think what you're saying about it is if you could click on the side. The only click on the side thing it's got is that if you want to play a CD.
Yeah.
Or a recordable, rewritable in it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So Brian, look, let me sort of be a little bit brief. Usually, if the battery is removable, the sliding switch or switches will normally be underneath it. So sort of in the vicinity of the hinge, and you'll see it. You know, it'll typically run along run along the length of the laptop underneath the hinge.
All right, okay,
If you can see that there's something there that you can slide a switch and remove it, and it's a big chunk in your hand. That'll be the battery. The fact
that you're only absolutely right here. I think. I'm sorry. Please bear with me. I've got it all upside down. And it looks like as if I click back this button, there's a button underneath, and if I click it back,
yeah.
Could that release the battery then?
It'll either be that or the ejector switch. No, it will almost certainly be that. The fact that it's an older machine makes it much more likely that the battery is replaceable, because the newer ones tend not to be so much. So what you need to do, Brian, is you need to find the model number of that computer. And look, do a search for Acer model number. Battery replacement battery
on the model of what it is.
Look for replacement battery, and don't buy it off an auction website. Buy it from a reputable retailer, even though it may cost you more, because there's a lot of fake and dangerous batteries out there.
I don't want anything, because there's times I'll go down, feed me cat, let me cat out, blah blah.
Yeah,
I wouldn't like anything to go on fire, obviously.
I understand.
And Brian, advice there.
The other thing I'd say to you is be aware of the price when you go for this, because if that battery price starts to creep above £100 and that machine really is, you know, getting on for 10 years old, there will come a point when that's not worth spending a large amount of money on, that it would be better to put that towards a newer device. Hopefully that's not the case, but you don't want to be spending, for example, £150 on a battery, because it's disproportionate to the value of the machine as it is today. Did you say it's running Windows 7, by the way?
Looking at it, honestly, I'm looking at it. Do you know what?
Brian, when you have time...
I need glasses.
I beg your pardon.
I think it's Windows 7.
Okay. Just check that when you get time and make sure it's not Windows XP or Windows Vista, because those are no longer supported. And you've talked about the fact that you go online, and therefore you need at least to have, I would say, Windows 7 or above these days to safely use a computer on the internet. And again, that's another thing to look at, because if you did find you were, for example, running Windows XP, then you've got the cost of upgrading that and the battery, then you are more likely to be looking at a replacement machine. Because bear in mind, when you replace the battery, you've still got an old machine, and even if the battery is good, the rest of the machine is old and something else on it will eventually fail as well.
Rapidly gets to the point, doesn't it, Fevzi, where it's just a much better idea to buy a new computer.
Yeah, because if it's the original hard drive as well, you know, that 5 to 10 years is the sweet spot for these hard drives dying.
Mm.
And then you know, do you have a proper backup solution in place? You should have that anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, that drive's gonna peter out at some point. It's all drives do, it's just a question of when. So just be careful about throwing a lot of money at an aging machine. I'm not a person who likes to say to people, oh, just go and buy a new machine, but there is a point when, you know, it is perhaps wiser to put that money towards even a £250 laptop will run rings around that laptop.
It certainly will,
you need to think about the economics of it as well.
Brian on Merseyside, thanks very much indeed for your call. He called us on the tech phone in here on Up All Night on 5 Live on 08085 909 693. We've got around about 10 minutes left to take a few more of your calls. We've had texts as well on 850 58. One from Martin in Belfast here, Fevzi. He asks, when he accesses his Hotmail accounts on his iPhone,
mm-hmm.
it works fine,
yep.
but when he does the same thing on his iPad Pro, he can't see some of his saved emails. He says the settings appear to be correct. Do you have any ideas?
It could be in the settings, in that Martin doesn't mention whether the iPad Pro is a cellular model or it's being accessed via Wi-Fi.
And
that could be the difference, because the settings for email will be different. So it could just be the way that it has been set up. So you need to you need to check with the email provider what are the correct settings for a device connected in various ways, okay, be it cellular or Wi-Fi. And my best guess is it is in the settings, because both those devices run iOS. There could be differences in the version of iOS that they run, but none of those differences should really give rise to this problem. So my guess is it is the way that either the browser is configured or the email account itself is configured that's causing it. So you need to revisit those, look for any differences, and also be aware of if you're accessing the internet differently. Are you accessing it via cellular method on one and not on the other? There may be differences in the firewall settings on the devices as well.
We'll see. Well, hopefully you get a bit of information there. Graham in London has called us meanwhile. Hello there, Graham.
Hiya.
Hi, what would you? You've got a problem with an iPod. I didn't know people had iPods anymore. I mean, I've still got one, but I thought they'd all moved on to iPhones. What's your situation at the moment?
So I've got a very old iPod, which I think is a Generation 4 iPod.
Yeah,
it's got about 6,000 songs on there. The only way I can upload songs to it is via a CD or via discs and going through the iTunes account.
Yeah.
It doesn't link to, obviously, it allows me to download directly from iTunes. So what I want to do is to buy a new iPod, a new generation one, mm-hmm. but I'm told that I can't then transfer the songs over from my old iPod to the new generation iPod. I've been to the Genius Bar at Apple, mm-hmm. And they've said that, in essence, I will lose all the songs on there. Because it won't transfer across.
Did they say that's because of something called DRM?
No,
digital. They didn't say digital rights management. I mean, I'm gonna say they probably know better than I do, because they'll have sat and talked to you about this for some time. However, in principle, if you can synchronize your existing older iPod with a computer using iTunes, and make a copy onto there, then it should be possible to get that off. If iTunes won't, for some reason that I'm not quite aware of, allow you to do that, there are third-party utilities that can do this. And
right.
I need to be careful what I say to you, because if it's a digital rights management issue, then the reason why they've stopped you doing it is a copyright issue. However, I will just say to you in general terms, that there are third-party utilities that can take the contents of almost any iPod, put it onto the hard drive of a computer in such a way that it's then accessible by newer devices.
Right. So if I wanted to do that, would it just be go to, say, a normal computer specialist and they'll be able to do it for me?
I think you could do, or it depends how sort of technically confident you are. A little bit of searching with Google being our friend, we'll find that there are a variety of tools. I'm just being a bit careful about how I say this,
okay.
because it's essentially circumventing what Apple would like. But sometimes what Apple would like isn't, if you do something that Apple doesn't like, doesn't in and of itself make it illegal. It depends on exactly why this wouldn't work. And that's why I asked you about whether it was a digital rights management issue, which is essentially a copyright issue. But what I can tell you is that these tools exist. They can strip the music out of an iPod and put it into a form where it can be accessed by a variety of devices, including an iPhone or non-Apple equipment as well.
Great. Okay, so there is an option. I just didn't want to lose all the songs. Yeah.
It's not necessary, no. I mean, sometimes there are artificial restrictions put there by Apple for commercial reasons or for other reasons, I guess. So, but usually there's a way around it, and in this case I'd be quite confident that you can do it.
Graham,
okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed for your call. Thanks a lot. Graham in London there with the question about iPods and iTunes. 85058 for your text. We've got around about 3 minutes left, Febsy. Jackie has texted. She says, how do I prepare an old laptop for disposal to ensure any personal details are wiped off?
Yeah, okay. The safest method, and this is, you might not want to hear this, but what a lot of people do and what a lot of companies do is they remove the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And they either keep it or they destroy it.
Take a hammer to it, basically.
Yeah,
like
or put nails through it and then incinerate it, whatever. You know, I've seen people do all sorts of things. If you don't want to do that because you want to pass it on to somebody, you either want to sell it as a, something that's working or give it to, you know, a family member, then the second best option is to comprehensively wipe the hard drive. And that doesn't just mean formatting it. When you format a hard drive, you're not deleting the data on it. The analogy that I often use is imagine a book and all the pages of the book have information on it. And in the back of the book, there's an index which mm-hmm. shows you how to get quickly to any piece of information. When you format a hard drive, effectively what you're doing is ripping out the index pages. But all that information is still there if you know how to read it.
Yes.
So it's not deleting every bit of information. But there are software programs. There's a program called KillDisk, K-I-L-L-D-I-S-K. And what that does is it overwrites every bit of data on the drive repeatedly with random zeros and ones or zeros and ones in cycles. And it does it over and over again. And you know, the more you allow it to do it and the more you allow it to crunch, the more secure it is. Theoretically, it's possible to recover that data, but you'd have to be of interest to a government or something like that for them to want to spend the money on doing it. So that would be a good compromise if you're not willing to remove the drive and destroy it. You can download, there are free versions of KillDisk that you can download on the internet, or and they will be enough for your purposes. You won't need to go for the paid for version. There are other programs that do the same thing, but I've had good experiences with KillDisk.
We have one final text. It's anonymous, but a perfectly reasonable question. Mobile phone upgrade is due soon, within the next couple of weeks. Wondering what will be the best model phone, best mobile phone on the market. This person currently has a Samsung Edge 6 Plus. What would you recommend?
Okay, well, if you want to stay with Android, and you've got the money, then it depends what you want. What, you know, it's like saying what car is best, but something like a Galaxy Note, for example, maybe not the latest one, but maybe one model back would be more affordable. They have very large screens, very bright AMOLED screens, which are, you know, very vibrant colors, very blacks and bright whites and mm-hmm. so forth. It sounds like washing powder, but it has that technology. So Samsung would be a good brand to go for if you're going to stay within the Android set system. If you wanted to go Apple, I noticed that their most affordable iPhone got a price cut a few days ago, the iPhone SE. So if you wanted to go over to the dark side, as it were, then you can maybe look at one of those as an affordable device. If you've got bags of money, you can wait a couple of months and buy an iPhone 10.
For £1,000.
For £1,000 plus, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll probably have to do a whole separate phone in about the ethics of spending £1,000 on a mobile phone, but I think that's for a different day, Fevzi. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed for all your calls and your texts. Fevzi, thanks very much again. Just give us a quick details about your website.
You can go to gadgetdetective.com, or if you've got a question we didn't get to it tonight, you can hit me up, as they say, on Twitter. It's at gadgetdetective. If you follow me on Twitter, I'll be happy to try and help you with any tech questions there as well, at gadgetdetective.
Fevzi, thanks very much indeed for all your calls, all your texts, all your advice tonight.
BBC Five Live.